welcome to the first ever Providence College Friar Pod, which is the Providence College Friar blog podcast. Today we're going to be talking about both the Puerto Rico tip-off and potential transfer Jake O'Brien from BU, and we're going to also be going over the roster and take a look at, you know, middle of the summer, what we have going on and who's going to be playing for us, who's not, what our front court's looking like, what our back court's looking like, and what we should be expecting, hopefully, from the team this year. With me is Chris Torello, the Friar broadcaster, and Danny McNamara, the Friar town mayor, and I myself am Daniel James, the Warrior Friar. Guys, how are we doing tonight?
Doing well, Danny. How are you?
I'm doing
well.
Thank
you, Danny, for setting this up.
You're welcome. All right, guys, we're going to start off with the Puerto Rico tip-off. The teams were announced, I think, about a month ago. We got eight teams, including Providence. We got UMass, NC State, UNC, Asheville, not UNC Chapel Hill, UNC Asheville, Akron. Whatever, LeBron James's hometown that hates him now, Oklahoma State, Penn State, and of course the University of Tennessee. So, for those who don't know, the tournament layout, the way the Puerto Rico tip-off works, is it's 3 days, and it's all in Puerto Rico. It's not like the previous tournaments that PC has played in recent memory, where we have a couple of games at home, and then we send them off to wherever they're going, South Padre, or, you know, if it's the World Invitational Cup, if it's just, it stays right at the Dunk. In this case, all of the games are going to be played right at Puerto Rico. And it's going to be Thursday, Friday, and Sunday of November 15th, 16th, and 18th. And the way it works is all eight teams will start in the quarterfinal bracket, and then the four winners of the quarterfinal will move to the semifinal, and the four losers will move to the losers bracket after the quarterfinal. The winners of the semifinal bracket move to the finals, obviously, and the losers of the semifinal bracket move to the third place game. And the losers in the losers bracket, if those of those four teams, the two winners will play in the fifth place game, and the two losers will play in the seventh place game. So pretty confusing for an in-season tournament. We got a couple of interesting tidbits, and these are off the Puerto Rico tip-off official website. NC State received votes in the final coaches poll of last year and was a number 11 seed in the NCAA tournament. UNC Asheville was the Big South Championships and a 16th seed in the NCAA. They lost to Syracuse in what many considered during the game to be a pretty controversial loss. If you guys remember, Syracuse won off what was basically a couple of free throws that they got back after missing them because they were calling lane violations. And at the time, everyone just thought it was favoritism, but later the rules were reviewed and they said that it was actually the correct call.
The ball went off the guy's arm, Danny. It was UNC Asheville ball. I remember it as clear as day.
I'm not saying one way or another. I'm just saying that's what it looked like. Tennessee, UMass, and Danny Mack, you're going to have to help me out again. Akron. Earned NIT berths, and of those teams, the Tennessee Vols had the first round win over Savannah State, but fell to in-state rival Middle Tennessee in the second round, and they were the number one seed. UMass, the number five seed, advanced to the semifinals. They won over number four Mississippi, number one Seton Hall, and number three Drexel before losing to Stanford, who was a three seed. And Akron finally got it, which was also a number five seed, lost in the first round to Northwestern. And this wasn't on the interesting facts part of the website, but Providence is actually competing in this tournament for the second time in school history, the first time being in 2007 with head coach Tim Welsh, where they placed second in the tournament. They defeated Temple and Arkansas before they lost to Miami in the championship game. And for those who remember that season, that was actually a season that started off with a lot of promise. You know, we had the good run in the tip-off. And then, you know, we had a good game against Boston College that went into overtime where we won. And that was played at the Boston Garden. And from there, we went to Big East season, kind of fell apart. And that was the end of the Tim Welsh era from there on out. So, guys, looking at the field, Eight teams, including Providence. What are our thoughts on this early on? Torello, why don't we start with you?
Well, first off, I think it's a great field for Providence, and we'll have to see with final rosters and everything, but I think this is a great tournament to be back in. As you mentioned, Danny, we were there when Tim Welsh's final year, and I think, if I remember correctly, when they played Arkansas in the opening round, Arkansas was actually ranked in the top 25, and we beat them on ESPN, and that was a really big win for us. And it was, and like you said, it jump-started the non-conference. And so to be coming back here, I think, is really great for what Ed Cooley's been able to do. To be honest with you, I want to play Oklahoma State, or I want to play a name like Tennessee. I know Tennessee's been down since Bruce Pearl was gone, but I really think the name is more important. UMass would be a great team because the A-10 has done a lot of great work building up that entire conference. But, you know, like I said, just, you know, win and keep winning and continue on and make sure as the dates go on, you're playing a later game in the day, and that means you're doing pretty well. So that's pretty much where I stand on it. Just want a good showing. We haven't had a great showing away from home in these tournaments lately.
That's very true. Danny Mack, what do you think?
Well, I think just looking at the teams in the tournament, the team that really jumps out at me is NC State. We all know that Chris Dunn and Ricky Leader were top 30 guards, but NC State also brings in Rodney Purvis and TJ Warren, who are also top 30 guards, freshmen coming in. And Oklahoma State has an unbelievable player, Marcus Smart, also coming in as a freshman. So I think the diaper dandies, as Dick Vitale likes to call them, really jumps off the list for me. And I think that the Friars' biggest issue in this tournament is going to be experience, especially last year participating in that tournament. It was good to get their feet wet, but I feel this year they have a chance to really make some noise in a tournament like this, which would really be good for a young team early on in the season.
And, you know, Danny, just to go off that point there, I think you look at what we played last year down in Cancun, you had a team like Northern Iowa. Now, that may not be a household name, but that's a team that made some noise in the NCAA tournament a few years ago, if I'm correct. They were a number 9 seed, and they knocked off the number 1 overall seed, Kansas. And that's the thing. And I think what Ed Cooley's going to be able to do is say, you know, say we get matched up against a UNC Asheville, he'll be able to say, hey, guys, they went toe-to-toe in the second round with Syracuse. This is a good team we're playing. You know, they have a good coach. You can do all that. You know, if he plays at UMass, you can say the same thing. He plays in Oklahoma State. It's set up. And even NC State, as you mentioned, they're receiving votes, like Danny James said. This is a great opportunity for the Friars to go to a really, really good tournament and really show what they're all about early in the season before Thanksgiving.
And even to play a big-time basketball school in Tennessee, even though they've been quiet the last few years after the Bruce Pearl saga, but Kunze Martin is a great young coach.
He is.
And I feel that playing bigger-name schools for the Friars is something that their fans look for, and hopefully it's something that the players look forward to as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You know, it's interesting. Coming from a big conference like the Big East, you generally tend to gravitate towards playing names from the SEC like Tennessee and, you know, the Big 12 conference with Oklahoma State, Penn State with the Big 10 conference. But, you know, you look at some of the teams like UNC Asheville. I mean, you know, we talk about how they gave Syracuse a run for their money. They lost to Syracuse in the second round of the NCAA tournament, now formerly what would have been the first round, I guess. You know, they have four seniors leaving the team, which will hurt them, but they won 24-10 overall. They won the regular season and conference tournament. You know, the coach has been there for 16 seasons, and he doesn't have a winning record, but, you know, it's pretty much spot on at 500. It's 240 and 242. And then you look at another team, you know, like from the MAC conference, Akron, and you're looking at a coach with 8 seasons who has a 679 win percentage. He's 184-87. Last year they finished 22-12 overall and 13-3 in conference. They finished first in their conference outright. In the title game for their conference, they lost by 1. And in the NIT first round, they lost by 1. I mean, these guys are competitive. They were 13-2 at home. They broke even away at 8-8. You know, so you look at some of the teams in, you know, the lower tier or the low major, I guess is the proper terminology. Those teams are still pretty competitive. And, you know, they're not losing a whole lot of firepower. And then you consider the fact that you got Coach Martin, who was only in his first season with Tennessee, and, you know, they didn't have a phenomenal season, and Tennessee's kind of, you know, people say they fizzled, you know, since Coach Pearl left. They finished 19-15, 10-6 in conference, and they finished in a three-way tie with Florida and Vanderbilt. And, you know, obviously first went to national champion Kentucky. And they only have two seniors leaving the team. So, you know, you're looking at either teams with very seasoned coaches who are from lesser conferences that have really established themselves within those conferences, or teams with newer coaches from bigger conferences, you know, both Penn State and Providence, in addition to Tennessee, have a first-year coach who will be entering their second season this coming season. NC State will have their second season with their current coach. And Massachusetts, Derek Kellogg, Coach Kellogg, only has four seasons under his belt with them. And, you know, all these coaches, you know, if they're not already doing great things, they're building to great things. So, you know, it's not the Maui Invitational, but given the field and, you know, you can't underestimate any of these teams. I mean, you know, look at what happened with Syracuse. They came in the tournament last year. I think they were second in the nation. They lost in the semifinal of the Big East tournament to Cincinnati, and they almost had a one and done. And they would have been the first team in NCAA history to lose as a number one seed. You know, and that was to a team from the Big South. So you really, you know, looking at the field, it's not, you know, it's not as light as most people will just, you know, look at it and just assume.
No, Danny, I think you're absolutely right. And the fact of the matter is, with the exception of Akron, who, by the way, plays in the same conference as our old buddy Keno Davis, good luck with the full pressure defense there. And then you also have Penn State and Providence. Those are the only teams in this entire field that did not see postseason play last year. So, I mean, you're right. Don't underestimate this field. These other teams, I think, you know, Penn State, what, 12-20 last year? Akron, you know, they had wasn't that great of a season. But Providence, I think it would be I think it would open some eyes if Providence College could get to the championship game like they did back in 07.
I think another thing that paves the way for a few potential victories for the Friars here is none of these teams were really dominant last year and neutral sites are away from home. I'm just looking at how Tennessee was 0-3 at neutral sites last year. But NC State was 6-3, so obviously Tyler Harris, we'll get into that later, is transferred from NC State. But just looking at the list of teams, I think another potential interesting matchup would be against UMass, who won 25 games last year. I don't care what conference you play in, you win 25 games in college basketball, you're a pretty darn good team. You're doing something right.
Absolutely.
So I think all these matchups are very winnable games, but also very interesting games for the Friars as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Another thing to consider, you know, the Friars realistically are the only team not losing any seniors. And I mean, you know, we could talk about the transfers we lost in Bilal Dixon, Gerard Coleman, Ron Gipley, and Kiwi Gardner possibly, which we can get to later. Am I forgetting anyone? I think that's everyone we lost.
That's
but, I mean, you know, the core of our team is still there. We still got, you know, an excellent point guard in Vincent Council.
One of the best.
You know, we got to expect big things from Kadeem Batts based on how he's been playing in the summer league, which we can talk about a little bit later on. And then, you know, provided Brees Kofani develops and Bryce Cotton continues his reputation of icing threes, you know, you add even just Ricky Lito alone into the mix, and that's before, you know, the potential of Jake O'Brien or, you know, some other front court players developing. And, you know, the Friars could end up being the underdog in this tournament that comes out on top, should they play, you know, the seeding go well with them and they play their cards right.
And I think it all, like I said at the beginning, it all depends on the roster. Might be a good time to get into that, but I think it all depends on how the roster shapes out by the time we have Late Night Madness in Alumni Hall come the middle of October.
Good point. You know, the roster, you know, is really not solidified until the first game. You know, we were all expecting Kiwi Gardner to be backup point guard, and he didn't see any floor time. He saw more time, you know, busting around the dunk than he did getting to play for the team, which was an unfortunate situation. But goes to show you never really know. And you know, with so many of the players, both new and old, in flux right now, it's going to be hard to say one way or another who's going to be on that floor come the third week in November.
Mm-hmm.
And speaking of the roster, why don't we move gears towards Jake O'Brien as a potential transfer? And there's already been a great deal of discussion about him, you know, both on Scout Friars, the official message board for PC Basketball. There's been discussions on Twitter. You've seen stuff in the Boston blogs and the whatnot. But, you know, basically what we're looking at is a 6'8 forward, 220-pound, 23-year-old transfer from the hometown of Weymouth, Massachusetts. And he's currently considering Temple, Purdue, Virginia, BC, Ohio State, and NC State in addition to Providence.
He was at Temple today.
Yep.
He just left Temple.
He just left Temple. He should be on the Friar campus this weekend. So, you know, everyone seems to have a split opinion on him. Either they're very in favor of it because it's going to add depth to the front court, or they're against it because they say, hey, this was an American East guy. You know, what are we doing? We're in the Big East. We're still we're still going to be competing in Syracuse, Pitt, UConn. Chris, why don't you start us off? What's your thoughts on picking up Jake O'Brien?
Well, first off, Danny, I think going back almost, look at how many times can Ed Cooley not succeed with that pitch? You know, like, we're in the Big East. We're playing these schools, even with Syracuse leaving next year, Pitt leaving, whatever. How can you not want to play your immediate playing time? And so that's just something that's going to continue to boggle my mind. When you look at Jake O'Brien, what I really like about the guy is the fact that he is another big guy that you can put down underneath. Never had any behavioral problems from what we've been able to find out. What I like about him is that more than anything, from the stats that you helped get us from GoTerriers.com, I love that he seems like a really durable guy. He's not afraid to play multiple minutes. He went 33 minutes per game over his entire career. That's something I really like about it. I'd love to have seen a little bit more rebounding. I think he averaged about 5.5 rebounds per game throughout his career as a Terrier up at Boston University. But I really like the fact that this guy can play. He's not afraid to go up and get the ball. He's had a couple good seasons when he's been blocking some shots. He had a double-double against UConn when BU played there a few years ago. I like the fact that he's also 23 years old. This team has been too immature too long down here in Friartown. Yes, they're maturing, but I think it'd be nice to have a guy who's 23 years old, 1 year away from getting his degree, and really wanted to make an impact. This is a last hurrah for this guy, so I really like this.
All right, and Danny, what do you think?
I think anytime you can add someone with experience and someone that's not afraid of the moment, it's someone you have to jump on. I mean, just watching his videos the other day, I was seeing that he hit a game winning shot against Hartford, I believe it was, and I know we all in this day and age all talk about the clutch gene, having the clutch gene, and knowing what to do with that, but I feel a big man 6'8" that can come in for you, get a few rebounds, and also spread the floor. It opens up so many more lanes for the guard play that we're going to see this year in Friartown. And someone that can pick and pop, someone that can take his man off the dribble and back someone down. He just can do so much for you on offense. And also on defense, he's a big body. He's not someone that's just going to go in there and slap around and get a few fouls quickly. He's someone that's going to stay on his ground, stay in the block, stay in the post, and really fight for his positioning.
Another thing I really like is that, you know, now Danny, maybe both of you Dannys, maybe one of you could help me out, but he had the foot injury that occurred back in December 2010, I believe that's correct.
Yeah, he redshirted all last season.
He redshirted all last year, okay.
Last year and then December the season before, so he's been out for a year and a half.
Well, we'd rather a foot than the back with a big man. I think we'd all agree with that.
Yeah.
But one thing I really also like about him is that he's not afraid to start. 77 of 79 games, and as Danny James, as you pointed out to us in our pre-Friar Pod notes, the only two games he missed were because of senior day, meaning two guys started over him because they were seniors. That's unbelievable. He's not afraid to step in.
Another interesting tidbit, he also played, I don't know how much this plays into it, he also played in the Puerto Rico tip-off a few years ago.
With BU,
when BU beat Indiana. So he's played against top-tier schools. I know Indiana wasn't as good back then, but he's played against Indiana. He's played against UConn. So he's seen big-time competition at BU before, so he won't be afraid of the moment. He won't be afraid to step up and make a name for himself if in fact, he does come to the Friars.
Yeah.
Now, Mr. James, if I can ask you a question to maybe help me out here.
Sure.
When it comes to, I mean, we're hearing from some people on, you know, Scout Friars, very reliable, and when it comes to the whole issue of he was possibly committing to Providence, and now we hear, I think it was through John Rothstein on his Twitter account, that he was just leaving Temple today and should be on the Providence campus, as you mentioned, later on this week. What do you think is the whole mindset in terms of how this, like, when this is going to get done, and what's the whole reporting issue? Because it seems like we had the Billy Barron incident, and I don't want this to become an issue where a lot of people jump before it's all done.
In my opinion, I think that, you know, in looking like at a Billy Barron case, for example, people were excited because, you know, it was another transfer with the potential for immediate playing time, which we need. It was going to provide a backup to Vincent Council, which we would have needed heavily in the event that Kiwi doesn't return or get to play again. I would say I'm not going to get excited about this until I see it on the Friars website or I get an official word on it. And as of right now, I haven't heard anything. I've seen a lot of good responses, both from fans and from Twitter members alike. Not just Twitter members, but, you know, professional journalists who are basically saying, you know, if I were this kid, I would pick up the phone and I would call Providence and tell him to play right now. On Twitter, AlexSim7 tweeted me and he said, in terms of the transfer, I like it. 1 year, low risk, high reward, adds immediate depth or starts to this team if he's here. It's an obvious win. And I think that if you can convince this kid, you know, because he's considering some good schools along with us. It's not like he's just looking at schools on the same tier of BU and then also considering Providence. You know, he's looking to jump up, which is actually interesting. And in terms of all these transfers, this is the first time we've ever really seen transfers, you know, upgrade from the school they're transferring from rather than just downgrade for immediate playing time. So, you know, this is going to be an interesting one. I wouldn't get excited about it until it's official, but at the same time, I would be excited to the fact that, you know, we're in contention for this kid and, you know, Cooley has a lot to offer him. I mean, you know, we talk about immediate playing time, and, you know, the obvious thing that, you know, people are going to say is he's from, you know, BU. They play, you know, in a much lower conference. They don't really have any basketball culture. But, you know, as you guys have mentioned, there's a couple of things that really stand out. One is his awards. I mean, just looking at it, 2010 America East All-Conference Third Team, 2010 America East All-Tournament Team, 2009 America East Rookie of the Year, 2009 America East All-Rookie Team for three times, and three times Rookie of the Week. He was, you know, on the week of 12-1, on the week of 2-9, and the week of 3-2. So what that tells me is that, you know, his best game is still rising. You know, he started as a freshman, you know, pretty much jumped in right away to start, and, you know, he grew rapidly from that point, and his awards show it. And that's just his awards. And then if you look at the BU records, as a junior, he was able to become the 31st Terrier to get 1,000 career points, and that's as a junior. He's fifth all-time in blocks at BU with 84 career blocks, 8 career double-doubles. He has a career high of 28 points as a sophomore, a career high of 5 blocks against George Washington, also as a sophomore. So, I mean, you know, you wonder what would have happened his junior year, especially with BU, had he been able to continue playing and not sustain that injury, or as a senior, had he not gotten re-injured in September.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know before the 2010-2011 season, he was named the team captain, so that shows he's a high-character kid, and that's what Coach Cooley is trying to bring in into Providence, trying to build a reputation.
Yeah, and one more thing, one more thing just on this subject. If you look at Ed Cooley, He has always loved to be honest with his players. We all saw the Seton Hall press conference after that loss. He said people are about to find out the truth. I can't see it in any other situation where you can be more honest with someone than a 23-year-old power forward. I think Ed Cooley can be as real as he needs to be with him. I think it's a little different than someone who's only 18 or 19 years old, maybe possibly transferring or even coming in as a high school recruit. Another thing that I'm trying to wrap my head around is this. Kid played at Boston College High. He's been born and raised in Massachusetts, as Danny James mentioned. The fact is that does he want to stay home for one more year? And that, to me, would be a simple choice, and that would be to come to Providence. Or, like we're all saying here, is this kid's, like Danny said, he's taking a step up. He's not taking a step back. That's very rare. But does he want to come here? Or does he want to go to an NC State where they've been to the tournament? Does he want to go to a Temple, which has a very good chance of making it in the A-10? Does he want to go to these other schools? That's, for me, where I kind of have to stop and say, man, I think he's in quite a dilemma here.
Yeah, it's that's pretty agreeable. I mean, you lay it out pretty well. The kid's been local his whole life, and, and people, they say Providence, well, that's a pretty local school, and the kid's from Weymouth. I mean, it doesn't get any more local than BU or BC. So even a transfer like Providence is going to be somewhat of a, not a culture shock, but it's going to be a journey, metaphorically speaking.
But I think someone like him would fit in. I know we were talking about moving up a level in Division I basketball, but I think someone like him would fit perfectly into Ed Cooley's flex style offense.
Absolutely.
He's not just going to clog up the lanes. He's going to be able to step out and hit a 15-footer. He's going to be able to get the ball in the post and feed it to one of the guards cutting. So I think it's someone that would excite Friar fans with his passing ability and with his knowledge of the game, and not just someone who's gonna jump off the screen, but he'll do all the little things, and that's someone that I know Ed Cooley would welcome with open arms.
He's got good field goal percentage throughout his career. It's dipped a little bit since his freshman year. I take it that's probably from injury, but if you can add another body, and I think Friartown has been aching for a big man, whether it be via the transfer or via the recruiting trail of a high school player, I think Friartown would just love to know that someone, like Ed Cooley put it, he wants you to want to wear black and white. He's not going to force you to. He wants you to wear it. So if this kid would like to trade up from the red and white for the black and white, I'm all for it. It's the tweets that Danny James got. I'm all for it. It's low risk. It's 1 year. If it doesn't work, you cut ties with him. No effect to the APR.
And if it works, he'll have a head of himself in the Friar fan section next year.
And I'll never have to pay for a meal on Federal Day.
It's interesting to consider as a, just a closing point. The kid's 6'8", and Cooley had mentioned in his interview with Steve Harnett on Scout Friars that he wanted to try and keep LaDonte Henton at the four because it creates great mismatch situations. There's a good chance this kid's going to be playing the three, and we're going to be, a lot bigger in terms of a lineup than people might assume, because, assuming all goes well, you're going to have Vincent Council and Ricky Lito running the ball up on the backcourt, and then on the front court, you're going to have a 6'8 kid at the three, you're going to have LaDonte Henton at the four, and then you're going to have either Kadeem Batts or Brees Kofani at the five. I mean, that, one of the biggest concerns going into this offseason, into this summer, was, what are we going to do about the front court? Are we going to be big enough? People are talking about playing a four-guard situation, try to emulate Marquette as best we can. They're one of the teams that love the four-guard lineup, and they do spectacular with it. But, people were really concerned, how are we going to pull this off? And I think that, with LaDonte at the four, that gives you plenty of room at the three to give this kid solid minutes. And worst case scenario, he gives us 10 solid minutes, hits a couple of field goals, grabs a couple of boards, maybe helps change the momentum of a game. And, he's not going to be the kid that's going to win a Big East game for you, but he's going to be the kid that will help put you in the position to win it.
I think a lot of people are overly concerned about getting a big. What is what does a big mean? Does that mean a 7-footer? Does that mean someone who's 6'10"? Does that mean someone who's 6'6", but 300 pounds? I mean, a big for me is someone that's able to play big. And last year we saw how big LaDonta Hampton was able to play for us. And I think the O'Brien and Hinton on the wings and on the low blocks, I think both of them are able to go to work on their man. And that would really open up, I can't stress enough how much that would open up for Ricky Lito and Vincent Council, because they could just be so explosive. And we've seen that with Marquette. I mean, last year, Jay Crowder was 6'6", I believe. He was a big body, and he played a lot bigger than his height, and he was able to step out and make a few shots. And I think that's something that a lot of teams right now in college basketball are looking for, someone who's a big body, who plays big down low, but can also step out and make the shot if it's open.
I know, absolutely. And just if I could bring in a final point, like Danny, you mentioned Danny James about the whole front court situation. Yeah, it'd be nice to have some bigs play the 3, 4, and 5. It doesn't surprise me that Coach Cooley wants LaDonta to be more of a 4. The thing is, he looks taller, he looks bigger. He looks like he's really worked hard in the weight room up in Friartown. I give him a lot of credit for that. It's about having bodies. It's about putting a team out on the floor. I really still believe in my heart that Ed Cooley wants to keep it guard heavy in terms of he wants to see Council running the ball. He'd love to see two wing guys, and with the likes of a 6'5 guy and Josh Fortune, having Ricky Lito coming in, it'd be nice to be able to keep those options and then just work, I think, the 4 and the 5 more for some bigger guys, with the smallest guy being LaDonta.
All right, and I guess that's as good as any of a transition into our last topic, which, you know, is just the current PC roster, what we're looking at here. And we've already kind of touched upon the front court. But, guys, what's the concerns? What's our best-case scenario, worst-case scenario? I mean, everyone's pining over this elusive big man. You know, we've swung out from everyone, from Jordan Dickerson to Nerlens Noel. So what are we looking at, guys? Best-case, worst-case?
Well, if you don't mind me starting this one, I'm going to make this very clear. We have had a rough summer in Friartown. You've seen some of the tweets. You've seen some of the different chat boards and whatnot, some of the threads. But here it is. We have all been pining over, as Danny just mentioned, getting a big. And I'm going to tell you this right now. If we are able to go into the season and Ricky Lito puts on a Friar jersey, it is a great summer for the Providence College Friars. I do not care if we bring in another 6'9", 6'8", 6'10 guy. If Ricky Lito plays, this team can play. This team will have we have a very underrated point guard in Vincent Council. We have a guy like Ricky Lito ready to go. Yes, Chris Dunn is a little injured in his timetable for coming back. We're looking hopefully right around Big East start. But I'm telling you, if Ricky Lito plays, we're going to be okay. We will have a chance. The NIT will go from there. That's what I think everyone needs to worry about. Love the transfers. Love what 2013-2014 looks like. I think Kadeem Batts needs to step up. He can't pout. But I'm telling you right now, if Ricky Lito puts on a jersey, Providence Friar fans, be excited about it.
Yeah, and I completely agree with that. I don't know how much we can compare the NBA game to the college game today, but if we see anything with all the free agency in the NBA, it's all about getting the guys, getting the star, getting someone, getting that game changer, getting someone that can score you 25 points in his sleep. I think Ricky Lito can do that, and I think he can do that as a freshman. I don't think next year there's going to be many guys in the Big East or even the country that's going to be able to guard him one-on-one just because his size and his athleticism. And he's also not afraid at all to take the big shot. I know he can get a little overzealous at times, and I hope the coaching staff and Coach LaFleur and Coach Cooley are able to work on him with his more of his all-around game. But I can't think of a better way to cap off the summer from this point on than say that Ricky Lito will be in that Friar jersey come the fall.
It would be a great summer. You couldn't, I mean, yeah, I think the thing is just a lot of Friar fans, and through no fault of their own, because the fact that we had a top 6 recruiting class was just amazing. We had to have a press conference for it. And everything about it just was saying, oh, my, you know, this is too good to be true. Then we hear some news about, you know, Chris Dunn's been fighting a shoulder injury. He's having surgery. People didn't want to admit that it was going to happen. You know, people were kind of saying, please, no, no, no. And then the Ricky Lito eligibility incident, which has just been going on forever, even ever since he announced back in September of 2011.
Mm-hmm.
And so the whole thing has just kind of been building up and building up. And we're finally here. We're almost in August. And it's about time for everyone to kind of step back and say, all right, let's see what we have in front of us. Let's see what kind of cards were dealt. And I think, you know, I love Vincent Council where he's playing. I think he'll get the ball to Ricky. And like Danny Mac just said, Ricky Lito's going to be able to go inside, outside, whatever he wants to do. I really think it's going to be around him and Vincent Council on the outside and the perimeter. And everyone else is just going to be, you know, make your spot jumpers. You know, if you get the ball inside, make sure it goes in, grab the rebounds, and get a fresh shot clock.
So the general consensus between you two is that, you know, the front court, you know, it almost doesn't matter as much as people are saying. You know, we've been pining over this five, this center, you know, just hoping we land a 7 foot, 6'11" guy. And in the great scheme of things, you know, the cards were dealt. You know, we can still be as competitive with the team we have, provided Ricky Lito suits up. You know,
absolutely, absolutely, Danny. I think the thing that we're both saying is that everyone just wants good news to keep coming. Fact of the matter is, it was bad news after bad news, going back to past coaches, going back to past players. Nothing seemed to be working well. And all of a sudden, right away, Coach Cooley comes in, the breath of fresh air. We were all at that, you know, we were all at that interview, at the interview for Ed Cooley. So I think when we look at what we can accomplish with Lito on the floor and what Dunn hopefully coming back, yeah, I think it will definitely be exciting for the Friars. As long as Ricky Lito suits up, that's all it is. Now, does that mean Batts doesn't need to play well? No, he needs to play very well. Does that mean Bruce Cofani needs to, you know, can just lay around and not play well? No. Does that mean I don't want Jake O'Brien? No, I'd like him to be on this team. I'd love him to be a Friar. But I think it's more important that the guys that are here right now, you know, they're able to kind of come together, and I think Ricky Lito's a huge part of that. He's already on campus, so, I mean, if 1 minute he's playing, 1 minute he's not, it's going to be deflating, just like with Kiwi Gardner. He was exciting. Everyone wanted to see him play. Next thing you know, he's ineligible. And what good is that to a team to have a guy sitting there in a suit?
And I know everyone's going to be waiting for that first day of classes. What is Ricky on? Does he have a backpack in his back? Does he have books in hand? But if he's playing, he's going to make an impact. And I think not even so much on the offensive end, but I think a lot of people are going to be surprised at how good of a defensive player he is, especially in the passing lanes. I know we saw a glimpse of it in those high school All-American games, but when him and Chris Dunn, and when he comes back, and Vincent Council, they're going to cause havoc in the backcourt. I know Coach Cooley's going to want to press, going to want to set up he changes his defense every time down the court, it seems. But I feel that Ricky Lito has the length and the size and the quickness to really, really cause havoc in the backcourt on offense and defense. And that starts with hustling and working hard and knowing his role. And I think everyone has to know their role on the team. And I think that's something that Coach Cooley is going to stress from the beginning of the season right to the end of it. Because if he's a shot blocker down low, the rebounder, if Kadeem's and Jake O'Brien, if he comes, the guys are going to work in the paint, if LaDante and Bryce are going to get all the wing points, if Vince and Ricky are going to work their two-man game, then I think everyone who's knowing their role and doing your job, and that, I think that's there's nothing else we can ask for if that's the case.
And hopefully Friar Faithful gets the fans to the stands.
And hopefully Friar Faithful gets the fans to the stands, exactly.
Yeah.
Come support the team.
Come support the team. Talking to you, students, if any of you are out there listening.
Besides me.
Besides you, Danny, and probably Billy Timlin, the president of the 2012-2013 season. So if you got complaints, talk to him.
We don't want to hear him on scout.
me and Torello, we've both retired. We're done. Those days are behind us.
We're like Clinton and George Bush the first. You know, we'll come in occasionally disaster relief, but that's about it.
But I do think that this year's team will draw a big student fan section, especially because of the type of players that Coach Cooley has brought in. and especially because of the returning players. I mean, we haven't really had a senior player that's really made a big impact since Sherrod Curry came a few years ago. But I think that'll get more of the seniors to come to the games as well, except for the ones that cheered Ray Hall. I know there were those, but I think that in the recent years, the juniors and the seniors didn't come out as much, and I think that that'll change because of the interest that Coach Cooley has drawn to the team and to the program.
Yeah. And speaking of interest, if there's any player that has had more interest without ever having played a game or even being on the roster, you know, technically speaking, it's been Kiwi Gardner. So, guys, last point of the podcast before we wrap up the inaugural launch of this podcast. What about Kiwi Gardner? Does he stay? Does he go?
Thoughts?
Whoa. One at a time.
Go ahead, Chris.
He's gone.
Gone? Is that definite or an opinion? I don't even know anymore.
It's not an opinion.
All right.
So. I do think that Kiwi is going to move on, but I just wanted to say that he wanted to be a Friar, and I know all last year he worked hard to try to be a part of the team, even though he couldn't practice with them, couldn't play with them. He was still working out, still putting up shots, still playing intramurals, still working on the staff at the games, and I know that Kiwi would have really excited the crowd, but all the best to him, and whatever he chooses to do in the future, I know he'll do fine because he's a high-quality kid, and he'll do good wherever he goes.
All right. Good points overall. Well, first podcast, I'd say that was pretty good. We will be doing this pretty irregularly until the start of the season, or at least until the full schedule is launched, and, you know, we're looking at Midnight Madness. But we're probably going to have our next podcast in a couple of weeks. You will be seeing that update on Twitter, on Friar Blog, on Scout Friar, so keep an eye out for it. And if you have any feedback, any questions, anything you'd like to hear on the next podcast, drop any one of us a line. We're all on Twitter. We're all on Scout. We all read that pretty religiously.
At Friar Town Mayor.
Yep.
At Chris Terrell 11.
Friar Town Mayor, Chris Terrell 11, and of course the Warrior Friar. Guys, it's been a pleasure to talk with you this evening, and thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to talking to you next time.
Go Friars.
Go Friars.
As Bob Driscoll says, go Friars.
Take care.